Yeah. Awesome. Bring it on.
So how does it make you,
feel?
Yeah.
3 Men and a Feeling is back this week with the feeling of self-loathing. Now, there's one that's probably not unfamiliar to you. With me are Andrew Fuller and John Hendry, who by this time may need no introduction, so I won't. Self-loathing, gentlemen, it's a ghost that haunts the corners of many of our hearts and minds and homes and families. Andrew, is it the main reason you have people coming through your door?
I think it is. I think that it's different than humility. Humility is being in contact with the clay, if you like, the reality of existence.
I don't even know why you're uttering it in the same breath.
Well, partly because I think we can confuse those two.
That sometimes really?
Sometimes being a bit self-deprecating and a bit humble.
Oh, I see.
Basically, I'm not. But it's much more than that. It's really a secret kind of fear that within me there is something dreadful. There is something monstrous. And many, many people live with this and fear that basically others will discover it. And the problem, of course, is that all people at some stage, probably particularly in adolescent years, but it can happen at other stages of their life where they just feel that essentially there is something inherently flawed about them that is detestable.
John, as someone who's spent much of his professional career working with young people, self-loathing in the school system, do you see it?
It exists when children don't think that they are making any contribution of worth. So I'm not worthy. And we need to ensure that the environment in which they live always recognises their worth and puts it forward. And I think it's important.
But then how do you get them to believe it?
Oh, well, it has to be, the culture has to be authentic in the sense of valuing them. And every contribution that they make needs to be acknowledged, not praised or anything, but at least acknowledged.
So be real about it.
Yeah, it has to be authentic because children can see through anything. They know what's authentic and what's not. So the self-loathing is something that everyone experiences, and children grow to understand it after a while. And it's important, I think, that you understand that, you know, I just can't do this. It's just not for me. I'm not good at this. And so it goes on. But what you can't do is remain there, because then all of a sudden it eats away at your confidence to actually do anything, and you go back into yourself, go deep down into yourself, and it's really difficult for little kids to actually be picked up in an authentic way and to be re-established. And that's where, you know, it's important to hug people when they're down. It's important to hold them close in a literal sense as well as a metaphoric sense.
I wouldn't wish self-loathing on anybody, but gentlemen, I'm going to put to you that if it wasn't for self-loathing, some of the great art in this world wouldn't have been made.
Yes, great art is often made through torture, isn't it? Great songs are written in moments of self-hatred. So it certainly has a purpose, and it's important to talk about this today, because unless we ever talk about it, we do a cover job. And strangely, the better that cover job is,
yes,
the worse off we are. And so we see classic examples of comedians who have very bleak ends to their lives, as an example. People who've covered up incredibly well their own sense of self-loathing because they couldn't accept, really, I think, some of the elements of perhaps falling from their previous glory. And so,
or, in fact, their whole perception of themselves has fueled their entire career. Not just the end of their lives, but in fact, you know, you could probably argue that a number of the world's great entertainers have carried I wonder when they'll discover what a sham I am, underneath all that.
Yes. A fear that they'll be exposed.
Yeah. So they work damn hard at pushing the best version of themselves out there in what to them feels like a desperate hope that that will suffice.
Yes. It'll be enough.
Yeah. And yes, for a lot of people who admire their talent, it is enough.
Yes.
It's just that it's not their true life of their own perception.
No. And if you look back over the sessions that we've had, Michael, we looked at what constitutes a quality relationship. And the second major element is the forgiveness one, to give for yourself.
Yes.
And what David Curl, a Canadian doctor in Vancouver who worked for the last 15, 20 years in palliative care, written a wonderful book, which is What Do Dying People Want? And they want to be forgiven and to forgive. And this means that it lifts, they give for themselves, it lifts them from that moment where they just feel that they're just not up to it.
Mm.
And it gives them a break. And often when we are whipping ourselves, we don't give ourselves the types of breaks that we should.
Well, John, I agree, but isn't it also true that one of the reasons we don't give ourselves that break is that we don't trust the rest of the world will agree?
That may be so, but if we don't give ourselves a break, the rest of the world doesn't see us in another light. So I think we have to put out there at times. We don't want to mask things that are unreal, but we need to put out there just who we are.
That's a pretty gutsy thing to ask when you've gone through a life of self-loathing and you think for good reason, and now you're saying, I'm going to give myself a break and actually believe that I'm a good person. And I want the rest of the world to notice that change in me. That's asking a lot.
Well, it is. But most of our lives are lived in a relational circumstance, if not all our lives are lived in a relational circumstance. And what we need to do is make certain that that's constructed upon contribution. And we need to value the contributions we make. Now, but just by being silent in a moment is a powerful contribution. Just by looking someone in the eye is a powerful contribution. Touching someone on the arm is enough. These don't have to be huge events for us or huge actions for us to actually move carefully but quietly away from self-loathing.
Andrew?
I often think that the belief that there is something about yourself to loathe is a very compelling idea. And it's very hard to change intellectually. It's hard to argue against it. And so this is an area, and I find this in many of the people that I've worked with, that they change not by changing their thinking first, but by changing what they do. And in this area, of course, as John rightly says, it's about making a contribution. So just because you feel that you detest particular parts of yourself, that's not the entire part of you, and in fact calling upon that person to do things that are beneficial to other people will change their perspective. So partly it's about patching up a cover job, because, you know, basically if I'm doing good things, then, well, maybe I'll get away with it for a bit longer. But partly I think it's also by reframing who you are and seeing that despite having some of those elements that you don't like, you can still do things that are meaningfully a contribution to other people.
Is therefore self-loathing a result of you not properly coming to grips with yourself? Is it you actually running away from yourself that allows self-loathing to exist?
Well, humanity is messy, really. You know, we're a bag of bacteria and blood and guts and poo and all that kind of dreadful stuff.
And it's lovely to see you.
Yes, it's, you know, and so it takes quite a bit of acceptance to really deal with the kind of the real close-up gore of humanity, you know, in yourself, really. And so, of course, particularly when you're a teenager, as I mainly work with, and you're full of urges and ideas and thoughts and fantasies. And, you know, of course, at that very moment, you've got a face full of acne and you feel awkward and gangly and, you know, socially kind of phobic most of the time and filled with thoughts of romance and lust. I mean, it's a package of trouble. So it's not surprising you've got a few doubts about yourself at that point and you're trying to cover up it.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that we carefully look at ourselves, and I wonder whether we're not overcritical at times, and I think we shouldn't judge our worth on the successes that we make, but we should judge our worth on our capacity to manage the mistakes that we make. And I think that's the judgment of a good institution, a good nation, a good community, in the fact that we shouldn't judge it on the gold medals it wins,
right,
but more on the way it humanely and constructively manages the mistakes that are inevitable.
That kind of sums it up pretty beautifully, doesn't it? And so if we're going to tackle self-loathing, we have to embrace the fact that we are flawed, that the world is flawed, the people that we love and interact with are flawed, and that if we're going to learn to progress within ourselves and within our communities, we just have to accept that failure and mistakes are part of life and we shouldn't hate ourselves for it.
To err is to be human.
And mistakes are beginnings.
This has been Three Men and a Feeling.
Yeah.